I'm Lisa Mullins, and this is The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, Public Radio International, and WGBH in Boston. You might think that substantial progress was made this year in the global battle against the computer virus. After all, 2005 saw fewer headlines about worms and bugs and Trojans, spam, and all those other computer nasties that go under the name malware. That doesn't mean the battle has been won, though. In fact, the bad guys are doing just dandy. The World's technology reporter Clark Boyd has our story.
Warning, what follows may make you want to bang your head against the nearest computer. Some 15,000 new pieces of malicious software or malware were written this year. That's more than ever before. The global computer virus count now stands at 150,000. During major outbreaks, one of every 12 emails sent across the globe is infected. And junk email, or spam, accounts for the vast majority of all email. Virus writers, it seems, are growing up.
There used to be kids fooling around and spreading viruses just because they wanted to get the attention. Now, the virus writers are more criminals who are distributing viruses to make money out of them.
Mikko Hipponen is chief research officer at the antivirus firm F-Secure.
And if you're writing and distributing viruses to create an income for yourself, you're not interested in causing huge outbreaks, which will only become front-page news. In fact, that's the last thing you want. You don't want to gather any attention if you're a criminal.
And that's why it might seem that 2005's been a quiet year for computer bugs. The criminals want it that way. Graham Cluley is senior technology consultant at Sophos, a British-based antivirus company. He says that this year's attackers have been focused and stealthy.
The vast majority of viruses which we see these days are all about taking over control of your computer to spy on you, to steal from you, and to use your computer for sending spam or denial of service attacks against other websites. Computer crime is enormous business. There's so much money which is out there for grabs.
Especially now that so many people depend on the internet for banking and shopping. One common attack method is called phishing. That's with a PH, not an F. That's when a criminal tries to trick a computer user into giving away critical information, like a credit card number or a social security number. F-Secure's Mikko Hipponen says phishing's gone global in 2005.
Most of the phishing used to be in English, targeting big American banks and financial organizations. Now we're seeing more and more attacks in Germany, in Italy, in France, in the local languages. We've even seen phishing attacks in Greek.
Computer security experts often can't pinpoint who's launching these attacks or from where. But they do say there's a lot of hacker activity in Eastern Europe, Russia, North Africa, and the Far East. There have been some high-profile arrests this year. One recent case is from the Netherlands. Three young Dutchmen were accused of quietly taking over some 1.5 million computers. They allegedly wanted to use those computers to blackmail businesses and steal personal information. Alan Paller is director of research at the Washington-based SANS Institute, which provides computer security training worldwide. He says the Netherlands case paints a frightening scenario.
Organized groups of people systematically taking over entire sweeps of computers that might do e-commerce and then running extortion rings against them, or taking over tens of thousands of personal computers because they can rent your computer out to mail out spam. The biggest money is in spyware, where they install spyware on your computer so that they can pop up ads, and then they can get paid for every ad they pop up.
The antivirus folks are trying to keep up. Microsoft, for example, has stepped up efforts to patch holes in its operating system. But, Paller says, the hackers have responded.
All the applications that we put on our computers after we buy the computer turn out to be opportunities, and a surprising number of those were programmed by people who couldn't spell security, and so they have lots of holes in them.
That means new attacks are more likely to come in through something like your media player, or even through your antivirus software. But the situation may not be as grim as all that. Bruce Schneier is chief technology officer at Counterpain Internet Security in California.
Honestly, the internet is pretty much a safe place. You know, I'm on it every day. You know, everyone I know is on it every day. And we do pretty much okay. You know, there is crime, there are problems, but by and large, people are safe. And we need to remember that in sort of the sensationalist times where we only talk about the crime. Most days, nothing happens and you enjoy your internet.
Schneier and other computer experts recommend three things you can do to ensure your enjoyment. First, make sure you're getting regular updates for your operating system. Second, make sure your firewall's up and running and that you also have updated antivirus software. And third, never open any email or attachment from someone you don't know or trust. For The World, this is Clark Boyd.
Hackers, viruses, and spam have some of the net's founders wondering if it's time for drastic action, as in scrapping the existing internet and starting again from scratch. David Talbot isn't one of the net's founders, but he's talked to some of them and written about them in an article called The Internet is Broken. Talbot's a chief correspondent for Technology Review magazine. His article comes out in print and online this week. David, I was checking my email this morning and surfing the internet quite nicely, thank you. But then in your article, you talked to some really smart people who say the internet is broken. How broken?
Well, it's interesting because this morning I was making plans to bring my own PC in to have the hard drive wiped clean, so that I can get rid of all the viruses on my computer, and it's a problem that many people have.
Is the problem then viruses? I mean, what do we, this is something that's considered a security issue.
Well, there are many issues, and just to start from the quote, the internet is broken, that's the magazine taking a little bit of journalistic license, but it is based on some very firm statements by some of the internet's architects, including David Clark, who was the chief protocol architect in the 1980s.
What does he say?
He says that we might be at an inflection point where the utility of the internet could stall or turn downward. And those are pretty dramatic words for a man who's really been at the forefront of developing internet technology, that we really might be at the point where the internet's problems overwhelm its benefits.
Okay, here's what you wrote in the article. For the average user, the internet these days all too often resembles New York's Times Square back in the 1980s. It was exciting and vibrant, but you made sure to keep your head down lest you be offered drugs, robbed, or harangued by the insane. Times Square has been cleaned up, but the internet keeps on getting worse, both at the user's level and in the view of Clark, who you mentioned, and others deep within its architecture. What is it about the architecture of the internet that leads itself to these misuses?
It's that the architecture was designed in the 1960s and 70s, and at the time, the internet was just a way for universities and government agencies, all friendly people, to talk to each other and be able to do so in a robust way that if any one part fell down, the rest would still be able to communicate. It was never envisioned when it was initially built to do the many things that it does today. And yet, all the things that we do on the internet still uses that same basic architecture, which assumed that everybody on the network could be trusted. There's no security architecture in the internet. There's not ways to firmly identify who's doing what when you get a communication to say you really know that that email is from your bank or that it's really the person who it's representing to be on the other end.
And you spoke to people who said that innovation is being stymied by the way the net is now set up.
Well, the people that I spoke to, and they included computer scientists like Larry Peterson at Princeton University, say that, you know, it's, that basic architecture has been sort of added onto, patched, plugged. It's a creaky architecture, and it's becoming increasingly difficult to manage, and that it's probably time to start thinking about, instead of keeping on adding and patching and fixing the old clunker, to go out and buy a new car.
So what are David Clark and the others that you spoke with proposing?
The proposal is to really pull the research community together and try to think about how you could work security into the architecture, work ways to authenticate who's talking to whom on the internet. Technologies like these exist in various forms, but building them right into the architecture, and furthermore, to build a very large, very realistic test bed on which new architectures could be tested. It's great to come up with something in the lab that we think could work better, but until you really test it on real internet traffic, which is what they propose to do, you'll never know, could we really switch over to this new networking technology?
Give me another example of exactly how this would affect me if there were a redrawn internet.
Well, one way that it could affect you is, and a key concept is authentication. If you could know that when an email comes to you from Citibank.com, that that's really from Citibank, not from a scam artist somewhere in the other, in another part of the world.
Who makes the website look exactly like Citibank's, which has happened several times with many different banks.
Exactly, and they're losing hundreds of millions of dollars in the process because people are getting suckered and entering their account information.
So is the equivalent of this internet authentication idea sort of the same thing behind looking at a dollar bill and being able to see some kind of a code to make sure it's not counterfeit?
In a sense, it is. It would be that there'd be some way for you to know that an email representing itself as being from person X or company Y really is from that person. And there'd be intermediaries smart technologies on the internet that would be able to do this for you, that would be able to say, yes, you're Lisa Mullins and you have sent this email and it's really you that sent it, and the other person on the other end knows it's you.
Okay, but if you look at the internet as kind of a speeding bullet, then who's going to be able to stop that now, to start from scratch and redesign it? Is that something, what these people are proposing, is that something that anybody takes seriously?
Well, the National Science Foundation is in the process of trying to cobble together a program. I should say some program managers at the NSF are doing so, and they're trying to put together a program that would be $300 million over several years to develop the new architectural protocols, and then another $300 million or so to build a very realistic testbed on which these architectures could be given a trial run with real-world traffic, real-world conditions. If it works, then the answers will really come when the NSF does this, when these architectures are being tested, and it really only will get adopted if it does, much the same way the regular internet did. It's going to prove itself to be a better mousetrap, and people are going to say, hey, I want to use that network, not the thing that's giving me viruses and spam and malware on my computer. This other one actually works better. Huh. I'm able to trust who I'm talking to. It's not causing problems. My privacy is preserved. Hey, let's switch over. That's the way it would happen.
All right. There are a lot of hurdles before that does happen, though. Are we talking about years, if this happens at all?
We're talking years. We're talking 5 to 7 years just to get this research program into, you know, full high gear, and years after that to have a major impact.
David Talbot's article, "The Internet is Broken," appears in this week's issue of Technology Review.